Hey, everybody. Man, this week's episode is the first episode we're recording since the Whiskey Social. I'm sure you're tired of me talking about it. I am definitely exhausted for sure. I know I look a year older. I spent the entire day Sunday in bed. My lovely wife took care of all four kids while I vegetated and healed up. It was a phenomenal event. I really can't thank you guys enough. The event was intense, and just I'm extremely humbled to for it to be what it is because of you guys, because of the brands that supported it. I don't know if we mentioned it on this week's episode, but Myra has been fighting for a long time to be a part of the show, and it was just phenomenal. I'm extremely touched. So the event was great. I'm thankful. I'm also thankful it's over. I get to breathe for a little bit and just enjoy these episodes without the stress of the upcoming event. So this week's episode, we talk about my first love of anything whiskey was me accidentally buying a peated whiskey, a Laphroaig 18, which I know you guys have heard that story beat to death. It was my first experience in whiskey, even before bourbon. Like everyone's had the Jack and Cokes and your Wild Turkey 101s. Like, you know, your introduction when you first become of legal age. But my first foyer, my first endeavor in whiskey, accidentally was peat. And Lagavulin definitely is one of those that hold a special place in my heart. So they're not sponsoring this week. This is really just an episode for me. I'm a huge fan of the category. I'm a huge fan of Lagavulin, and I was extremely nerded out to have her on the show today. I was very, very honored. So this week's episode, I sit down with Myra Isai, which I learned to pronounce that literally 30 seconds ago. And we talk everything about the peat category from Talisker, Oban, Lagavulin. And we also, I got to sit down with, I say longtime friend, basically anyone I've known and am comfortable around for the past 3 years have definitely earned the title of longtime friend, Lincoln Obi. Lincoln is someone that I live vicariously through in his endeavors, where this man travels the world. And I don't mean goes to Canada and, you know, places within a short flight of America. This guy takes traveling to the next level, and his Instagram account is Against the Grain Traveler. Is there any punctuation I'm missing there?
Just Against the Grain dot the Traveler.
Against the Grain dot the Traveler. I love his Instagram account. Definitely check it out. He has been a longtime supporter of the Whiskey Social. He's been a longtime supporter of me, and I'm a huge fan of his. So I sit down with Lincoln Obi, who's working on a book, and Myra Isai with Diageo Spirits, their Diageo Reserve, and Lagavulin, Talisker, Oban, and we just talk peat. It's a highly misguided category or misunderstood category by many people who are scared of it, and I hope to change your mind. So this week's episode, like every episode, can be found on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Facebook. We shoot this for video on Facebook, and of course it ends up on iTunes and radio at 94.1 FM on SportsMatch. So you can find this podcast on every imaginable platform. Definitely, like I found out today, you can leave reviews on iTunes. We got a lot of 5-star reviews. I'm pretty excited about that. And by a lot, I mean 11, and that's pretty impressive for me. So definitely go review the podcast on iTunes. I don't know what it means if you review it, good or bad, but I appreciate it. So without further ado, Myra Isai and Lincoln Obi. Cheers. So let's start with the Lagavulin. Let's go youngest, and okay, then we can go through the Lagavulin range. And I've been such a peat fan from the beginning, because those who actually listen to the show know that my very first bottle of scotch that I ever bought was Laphroaig 18. I had no experience with scotch, so I just assumed all scotch was peated or smoky. Mm. And it was a nice introduction, and by the time I got through that very intense session with my father-in-law, because I bought it so I could, you know, I knew my father-in-law liked scotch. I was like, and he was a Chivas man. Chivas. Anyway, so I just fell in love with peat, and Lagavulin was definitely the first one that I fell in love with, besides Laphroaig.
Well, let's start by saying that peated is really an acquired taste.
Oh, sure.
So...
But and see, I've always been a big believer that alcohol, period, is an acquired taste. You can get used to anything. I mean, the first time you try sushi, it's usually not a positive experience for most people unless you grew up with a very explorative palate, you know? Mm-hmm. Peat, if in general, I couldn't stand beer in college.
In high school, huh?
Right.
Elementary school, I couldn't stand beer. It was just weird.
Mm. Yeah, Lagavulin 8.
I guess I'm weird because the first time I tried scotch, I tried it at a scotch tasting. I don't remember which one it was. It was like a whole variety of them at Specs. And I liked it from the first time I tried it.
I've always loved it. A vibrant, intense roller coaster of an experience. Because if you get past the intensity and approach it as just like, okay, I'm tasting something that, you know, before you even taste it or smell it, going into it, when you get into that level of hobby where you go, you become obsessed with trying new things in the whiskey world, mm-hmm. You look at it differently. So I know that I'm going to experience something, and you don't look at it as off-putting. You look at it from a different, like from an interest. Like, does that make sense? Like, a curiosity is the word I'm looking for. So with peat, if you have no experience with whiskey and you just go straight into it, it's like a big punch in the face.
Right. Well, the Lagavulin 8 is definitely the youngest or the newest addition to the portfolio. It was created for the 200th anniversary in 2016. And it's just delicious, right? As you described it a minute ago.
It's a little younger than I'd like, but it's still that really young, robust peat. And whereas the Lagavulin 16 is more sweet, you know? So I think it's a nice cross from like some more aggressive peated scotches. You know, your Laphroaig's very aggressive. Your young Ardbeg 10, that's a good comparison to Ardbeg 10. It's a very bright, intense peat.
Well, you know, peat definitely develops within the barrel, and the 16 is pure complexity, right? The creaminess and everything, but it's double the time in the barrel than 8. So that's where you find this explosion here in the 8, like the young, it's still like, you know, young and spicy, and you find a different texture, different. The peat is in a different expression at 8 than at 16.
Oh, sure.
So even if it's the same amount.
The longer it spends time in the barrel, the softer the peat gets. That's why your Laphroaig 25s or your Ardbeg 25s. I'm a huge Ardbeg fan, but the 25 I thought was completely boring. because the peat has softened, you know.
Boring.
Over time, the peat dies down. Mm-hmm. It gets softer, and the focus is more on the wood influence, mm-hmm. and not so much the peated barley. And it's so those young peats are always a lot of fun. There was a rumor a few years back that they were going to get rid of the 16. Do you know if that's still being talked about, or are you allowed to say? Or
no, I mean, it's been the classic malt for years. I really doubt that it's going to be going away. And as you might know, the classic malts were created like long ago for educational purposes. Yeah. So more than anything, Lagavulin is kind of the truest expression of an Islay scotch, you know, peaty, bold, complex.
We had on Macallan last week, which was a really, really fun episode. But part of the discussion we had was around sherry seasoned casks. The recent development or the recent popularity in whiskey has become such a boom, whether it's bourbon or scotch, that it's hard to keep up with demands. So that's why a lot of scotches, a lot of bourbons have gone to no age stated, you know, NOS whiskeys. So the 16 being this exceptionally old, I mean, that's really old for a standard expression where, like, you know, we have Talisker on the table. Huge fan. Talisker is amazing. But it shines at 10 years old, and that's almost half the age of the 16. So the thought was that maybe it'd be hard to keep up demand, especially once what's that guy's name from Parks and Rec?
The one
Ron that, Swanson. Yeah, as soon as he – I mean, Ron Swanson made Lagavulin popular again, was it 8 years ago? So, you know, not too long ago, it was like – Lagavulin was it, right? When you thought of Scotch, that was the way to go. So, yeah, there was just, like, thoughts that maybe it was going to go away. But, you know, I know you try to hold on to it.
No, definitely. Lagavulin has been one of the 16 especially, has been one of the Islay Scotches that are longer fermentation, longer maturation. Like, for a long time, it was probably the one that was aged for the longest time, like, for the 16 years old. But, again, it's part of the classic malts, and more than anything educational, like to teach us, or, you know, new consumers, like what was the classic way to make malts, right? Like now with all this technology that we have, we can mimic flavors and stuff like that. But this is the way that used to be 200 years ago before all this technology. So I think it's going to be around for a while. I hope, at least. Yeah. Are you ready for some 16?
I'm trying to think of how fast I want to drink this.
Oh, okay. I thought that we were using a different glass.
You can. Sure. Go ahead. Right there.
Just for the purpose of not rushing.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not rushing. Definitely. I'm not rushing.
But I think we switched from the 8, like, conversation to the 16. And, you know, while we're talking, let's
pour.
Convinced me to finish my 8. Thanks, Chris.
Okay.
When's your next trip?
My next trip, I'm going to St. Lucia and Romania.
I don't even know how you do it, man.
I get lucky. No, my dad is graduating from medical school in September. So it's kind of like a forced vacation.
Sure.
I'm complaining about it. Who wants to go to St. Lucia?
Is he graduating in St. Lucia, or is he graduating in Romania?
In St. Lucia. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
We were talking a little bit before the show. Lincoln has been, part of a trio of guys for a long time that have, done spirit reviews, and he's also a world traveler. Everything you've ever hoped and dreamed of doing, or if you got married at a young age and wished you had done a little bit more traveling, this is the man who's living. I'm living vicariously through his Instagram account.
Lincoln, I don't know if I can say everything.
Living the dream.
I mean,
still a lot of things that need to be checked off.
Oh, sure, but you're actively doing it.
I'm
sitting behind a table drinking. Like I spend most of my time behind a bottle in a
terrible
work capacity.
Career.
In a work capacity.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I'm definitely fortunate to be able to find a way to do these things. I'm not a rich man by any stretch of the imagination, you know, financially, let me say
sure.
like that, you know, and I find great deals
and then just go.
I just say, I have no responsibility. I could, let's see what's out there, you know?
There's a comedian friends, Bert Kreischer and Ari Shaffir. Mm-hmm. They're part of that whole Death Squad, Joe Rogan thing, if you listen to this podcast. But Bert Kreischer, I associate a lot with. He's married. He's got two daughters about the same age as my two oldest. Early last year, Ari just decided he was going to go to Vietnam for 3 months. But he didn't tell anybody he was going to Vietnam. He just said, hey, I'm leaving for 3 months. You're not going to be able to get a hold of me. Don't panic. I'm okay. I'm just going off the mat. Yeah. And then they had this whole discussion and this realization that you can do that. Like, you, the amount of, I mean, I am very happily married. I love my kids. I'm in no rush to run away. But just the realization that I know someone that literally can just say, I'm going to St. Lucia tomorrow and can. You know what I mean?
That's not tomorrow, but
I'm just saying it's a pretty remarkable thing.
Thank you.
Because, you know, it's just not very common.
Yeah.
I mean, and I respect that.
I think that ultimately, especially looking at this table of people, we're all basically doing the same thing. You know, not too many people are going to be bold enough to say, I love liquor. I'm going to take my career into liquor.
Sure.
You know, no matter whatever respect it is, you know. Mine just happened to be with travel. I don't make money off it yet, but one day, you know, I'll figure out how to make it happen. But
and you're if I'm not mistaken, you're writing a little bit of a book right now.
I'm writing a bit of a book.
A lot of bit of a book.
The book had finished, in essence, writing the book. It's called Aquarian Dreams. Excuse me. It's going to be part of a series called The Aquarian Memoirs. But it's an erotic romance, and it's about a daydreamer who kind of comes to the realization he's bored with his life and has these interactions that kind of bring life to him.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That's pretty neat. Yeah. So is this a biography?
Is this a biography? No, it's not a biography. I am not the person.
What's the guy's name?
The guy's name is Ethan.
And he just got back from St. Lucia.
No, he hasn't gotten back from St. Lucia. He didn't travel. No, he hasn't traveled in a couple of years, actually. Chris. His name's not Lincoln. I do put myself in a book. I mean, I think it's easier sometimes to write, to put yourself in the story.
I think easier is kind of giving yourself, cutting yourself short. When you're speaking from a place of truth and you identify with it, I think it comes through in the writing better than it would be if you were to just make it up entirely.
Well, I mean, and ultimately that's what's easier about it. Not to say it's easy. It's not an easy thing by at all. It's taken me almost 5 years to write this book. I was never a writer before. Outside of some poetry and some blogs, short stories weren't my thing. I hated English growing up. It was my least favorite subject. So, you know, I don't say easier to lessen with what happened, but for me to be able to identify with the character to some extent without putting myself as the character made the writing possible for me. I don't think I could have done it, or I would have had the passion for it if I was just writing about somebody else.
I had the passion to try to write an article to submit to Culture Map. and it did not go well. So I was writing about, I wanted to write something about the whiskey scene that's happening here in Houston. Regardless, it's not just one cause. It's not just one Facebook group. It's not just one festival. There's this all these different things. The city was primed for spirits a few years ago. There was a thirst, no pun intended, for where we are now, and it's finally come to fruition over the last couple of years. It's been this massive explosion where. And I've said this before, brands have spent a lot of money and budgets for Dallas and Austin, and Houston, not so much, depending on the brand.
Yeah.
And Houston was not the focus, where you've got these famously cultural rich places like Dallas and Austin. And now Houston's it for the state right now. And it's not to say that Dallas and Austin aren't full of culture, it's that Houston has just...
It's coming along, definitely.
It's just night, like overnight, it seems like. It's grown so fast. So I wrote an article about single barrels and how that's become the thing in Houston, that hunt for the honey barrel, that one special, unique barrel that's different than your standard shelf item. And I submitted it to someone here that I greatly respect, Mr. Eric Sandler. And he, in the most eloquent way that writers can... told me it was awful. So that was the end of my writing career. One of these days, I might find the inspiration.
Well, what I've noticed the difficulty a lot of experts have is that y'all are experts. I understand liquor. I understand whiskeys, rum, stuff like that. I will never sit here and say, oh, I know this stuff 100%. So with that, there's a connection that I'm able to make in my writing that seems...
Oh, you're an expert in eroticism?
You're talking right.
Is that what you're saying?
I was talking about liquor and blogs. Yeah. But with the writing, I speak on it from a layman's poetic way of speaking.
Sure.
So where you can break down the parts per million, well, most people don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
I can say, well, it's just... it makes me want barbecue. Like, I will put it in a way that
this is
that,
so
that makes sense to most people.
Every time I smell the 16, it's so iconic. And that's why I don't want it to go. I'm not a person who's opposed to non-age-stated whiskeys. I like them. A good whiskey is a good whiskey. There's no problem with it. But there's something so amazing about the Lagavulin 16. And for the record, they're not sponsoring the episode this week. I am not receiving any money for this. I am just such a huge fan of the everything. The phenolic,
because you have a love story as well, right?
Yes, I mean, yeah. So a few years back, my wife and I got into whiskey together. We started with everyone's heard the story of the Laphroaig 18 with my father-in-law, our marriage bottle, which was a bottle of Balvenie 15. Mm-hmm. And we went to Scotland a few years back, before the social, before Whiskey Pete, before everything, we went to Scotland. And I've always said there's like three things to look at in Scotland. There's churches, ruins, and distilleries. Like those are the three things to see, right? So we spent a week or a few days on Islay and Port Ellen in a cottage on the island. And on the island, there's the taxi companies are basically like Linda's taxi service, and it's Linda and her minivan. So we had scheduled a tour to go to Lagavulin. Particularly, my wife hated peated whiskey, but she does what she always does, and she did it for me. She went. She was like, "I'm happy to go with him and be on this experience for him." And we, the day that we were supposed to go to Lagavulin, the taxi service, Linda and her minivan, were on the other side of the island. So we walked. And we missed the first half of the tour. So we showed up at the tour, and this lady on Islay at Lagavulin said, they just made it into the warehouse. You missed the distillery tour, but you're more than welcome to go to the warehouse and taste. And we're not going to charge you. And I was like, that's amazing. Like, she's not going to charge me. So we went to the warehouse, and I always forget the exact order, but we tasted through. And I forget his name. Is it Lane MacArthur or Ian MacArthur?
Ian
MacArthur. This little short bulldog-looking guy, this older guy's been doing it for 50 years. And we sat down. We tried fresh make Lagavulin, unaged, awful, just horrible stuff. And then we did 12 years. We did the 16. And it's straight from the barrel. There's all these barrels lined up. And big hogshead, cherry butts. You know, puncheons, and then at the very end was a little quarter cask that was 48 years old, the oldest cask in the distillery. Mm-hmm. And we tasted through the 16, and then a 21, and then a 28-year-old, and then a 32-year-old.
You were so lucky that they did not charge you for all that.
They didn't charge you. And I can't remember if the next one was either a 36 or a 38-year-old. And we got to pull direct from the cask ourselves. Yeah. He just gave me the little
thief
and went over there and pulled it out myself. And so the 12, the 16, the 21, the 28, the 32, and then 36 or 38, I don't remember. And then the oldest cask in the distillery, a little 48-year-old quarter cask. And it looked disgusting. I mean, the cask was just been sitting there for 50 years, right?
Crying.
Yeah. So we got to taste 48-year-old Lagavulin. And I mean, tears in my eyes. And it didn't stop there. After we were all done and definitely, you know, pushing the limits of, we had to take a bus home.
Yeah.
He pulled out. Islay has this amazing jazz festival every year called Fishila, and different people pronounce it different ways, but from what I remember, he called it Fishila, and it's a jazz festival on the island that lasts about 8 days, and every day, the entire island goes to a different distillery. That distillery will release a special bottling for the festival. So Monday's Ardbeg or Tuesday's Lagavulin, whatever the days are. And they're very highly coveted bottles. And he had half a bottle left from the festival, and we shared a pour. It was the most hospitality we've ever received in a distillery. And I started with Laphroaig, and it was a special trip for us. And I love Laphroaig, but the experience we had at Lagavulin was mind-changing. My wife was all of a sudden a huge fan. So
she started loving Pete after that.
This is a true love story.
I mean,
I'm over here trying not to cry myself. You know, this is beautiful.
I'm a big crier, so you're not the only one fighting back tears. But it was such just the hospitality was insane. And we walked there, and the island is like 50 degrees year round. So in the, you know, first thing in the morning, me and my wife walking 2 miles to the distillery, going through that experience, and then riding a bus to Bowmore or wherever we went after that, it was, I'm forever a fan of Lagavulin.
And
it was just amazing.
And you just mentioned Ian MacArthur, like being there for over 50 years. He's like a big celebrity for us, but
huge.
That person is just one worker there. Like, he was pouring for you, he was talking to you like a normal human being. So what a lucky guy you. I mean,
it was amazing
experience.
I recognized him because he was in the episode of Parks and Rec with Ron Swanson because they had visited the distillery. We maybe saw three employees at the old distillery during that time. It was just an amazing experience. Very small town feel, you know, and just no internet, no noise, no. Yeah. I mean, it was just a small island in the middle of nowhere, a small distillery in a small town, and it was just amazing. So, cheers.
Cheers.
I can't toast. My cup is
empty. Oh,
man, I feel like such a lush right now.
I don't like
it. No, you finished both pours before us.
They're so delicious. Like,
they are so good,
it's,
yeah.
It's such a, like, the first one is like a sea salt almost, because I taste the peat.
Wait for sea salt.
It's almost like I taste, you know, those salted chocolates?
Oh, my gosh.
That's what that first one reminded me of. It was like, I'm going from dinner to dessert in one pour.
There's been really unique tasting notes mentioned with peat, right? Iodine, rubber tires, boots, like left at sea on the dock, you know.
Wet
those
leather.
Are some delicious boots. I might need to taste some.
Wet those. Leather. the reason why it's not a turnoff for me is because I know none of those things are in there.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Like, so being able to taste something while knowing that it's completely void of those things is why I think that's what a lot of people have to do. This is peat.
Mm.
And this, for those listening via radio or podcast, iTunes, Myra here is holding up a couple of pieces of peat. And I'm going to make a few statements here explaining what peat is that are probably going to have some incorrect information, so bear with me on this. But from what I understand, there are no trees on Isla. It's just this wind-whipped island full of these, you know, basically grass fields, massive grass fields. And what would happen is these grass fields are also void of erosion. They're the grass that grows will die and decompose, but not fully. And by the time new vegetation comes out, the old vegetation is still working on dying. And without erosion and without anything taking from the soil, it just becomes this what's known as a peat bog. And it looks just like soil. It looks just like a really wet black soil, you know. So what they do is it grows, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 1 millimeter a year. And so it takes, I think, 100 or 1,000 years for every foot. I think it's 1,000. So for every 12 inches, it's 1,000 years of partially decomposed matter. And what they would do is they'd cut into the ground with an L-shaped cutter, and I forget what it's called, but it would create basically bricks, right? So little mud bricks. And they would leave them out to dry, so all the moisture would leave them, and then those bricks would serve as firewood. And they were used to heat homes, and they were also used to roast barley. And at the time, that was the only way to do it. There was no wood on the island for them to do it, so they would use peat. And it imparts this really smoky, rich, and if you throw some sherry in there, like the way the 16 uses sherry refill, it just imparts this really sweet, campfire notes to it that in a very positive way. And yes, barbecue comes to mind, especially if you're
being nice. You can imagine being in a little cottage with that burning. And I don't know if I'd be happy or mad. Like, somebody needs to do something about this. This smells amazing.
When we stayed on the island, the cottage had coal.
Yeah.
And it felt dirty using that to heat the home at night, because you know how dirty coal is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just kept thinking, we're breathing this in. And but that's the only way to, that's the barley.
Smell that.
Mm-hmm. I'm hungry. Did you want to smell the
barley? Yes, I'll smell them. I'll smell them.
The peated
barley.
So yeah. Not all the barley is peated.
Reminds me of a farm.
Yeah.
And you guys get your peat from Port Ellen?
Your
barley?
For Lagavulin.
Yeah.
Yes.
For Lagavulin, not all the barley they use is peated, or all of
not
them?
Not all the peated.
Which one isn't peated?
We do have a few, like...
You talking about the classic malts? Like Glen
Kinchy from the lowlands.
Okay.
Or we also have... what is this? I cannot think of the name.
Dalwhinnie's
slightly peaty.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the 14-year-old... I do have
is
it.
Is it on the thing right there?
No, I just brought the tasting notes for the ones that we are actually tasting.
Okay. It's not on the chart.
Kleinlich. Kleinlich is from the Highlands, and it's not peated, and it's a 14-year-old. It's a little higher proof than normal.
I don't think I knew that Kleinlich was y'all's.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Kleinlich.
Speaking of which, did you look into that thing about the Lagavulin thing? About
the barrel?
Yes.
Someone is working on it.
Okay.
Yeah, there is a lot of questions about the new releases, like the select barrels for Lagavulin,
sure.
The new upcoming Game of Thrones.
I saw that. Yeah.
When is that one coming out? Is that coming out for the release? Can I get a bottle? A lot of questions I have about that.
I wish I have an answer. But there's a lot of new things coming up.
Yeah. I had seen online that there was... Someone in one of the Facebook world groups had showed a picture of a 21-year-old cask, and it said specially selected by, and then it listed four or five people. And I thought, oh my gosh, if Lagavulin's doing a barrel program, I want a barrel. And I'll take the barrel. The group will buy the barrel. The group will be happy about the barrel. It'll be amazing. As far as I know, it's never been done in Texas before. And the one to get out of that, a great introduction to that world, would be Lagavulin or Talisker. So I got real excited. I immediately was like, my
I want a barrel. The director of the Diageo Reserve program is in Scotland right now. So hopefully he's on vacation, but hopefully he comes back with a lot of answers. I mean, he has already been bombarded by all of us. Like, you know, as soon as there's something in social media or just a little noise out there. Yeah. It's just like, hey, when, why, how? All your questions are just directed to him. Mr. Ewan Morgan.
I'm friends with him on Facebook.
Okay.
I'll have to send him a little
personal message.
Hey man,
hey, my life.
I run a.
Bring me the barrel with you.
Yes.
Go get it from New York.
You and I have a show that no one listens to. Please give me a barrel of your whiskey.
Still enjoying that. 16.
Yeah, for those
really
who.
Good.
I'm so sorry, Lincoln. I mean, you're.
No. I don't worry. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I think this
you want
is
a
very
more?
This is very well
I,
done.
I'll be happy to.
Well, before we get more, yes, I I've do got, want more, but I want to go through everything, and then can I get more of
that?
Sure. I'm such a fan. So for those who have never tried peat and are only bourbon drinkers, I'll tell you that I would start with maybe a non-peated whiskey into the realm of Scotch, and then maybe, although. I would jump right in. I did.
Well, I think this
16 is a great.
I was just about to say it's a great because it's not a heavily peated. It's a well balanced.
Lagavulin,
it's about 38.
More than Lagavulin. What is Laphroaig? I think they're 28.
What is the normal range?
It depends if it's medium or heavily. Like Talisker is considered a medium, mm-hmm. and it's like from 16 to 22.
Okay.
Lagavulin is considered a heavy peated one, and it's. From 35 to 38.
This one didn't taste heavy.
And
this
it is.
One, it really
and
did.
That's
the, it
that's
reminds
just saying,
me
well
of Christmas.
Balanced.
It reminds me. That's a Christmas dram. That's something you can drink around a fire.
Christmas.
Around a
Christmas tree.
A campfire, you know what I mean?
I can see winter. Christmas.
I mean.
I guess I don't feel festive when I taste it.
To me, it makes you want to put on a sweater.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And maybe a scarf. And bundle up and let it warm the chest.
I can
see that. Fireplace
right
in front of
you. I think more November.
Like Nick Offerman.
Yes.
And all the
He sat there for an hour and drank Lagavulin. I've wondered how much did he get paid to sit in front of a fire and drink Lagavulin for an hour without saying a word.
Yeah.
It's
he's a true fan like you are.
I've tried so hard to get him on the show. What's the difference here between the 16? I've always I don't know besides the obvious the distiller's edition, and if I'm not mistaken, there's also a question I have about it on the front label.
Mm-hmm.
technically it's non-age stated.
Correct.
But on the label it says distilled in 2001, bottled in 2017, correct, which would lead you to believe it's 16 years old.
It is a little bit longer than 16, yes, at least 16.
So why the void of the age statement?
Because of the second maturation, they don't know if it was a year, a little over, a little less.
I see.
So the second maturation, every classic malt.
Oh, baby, that was great Friday.
Pop like a champagne bottle, right? Every classic malt, and there is six, and I actually earlier mentioned one of them that is not classic.
Did you want some?
Please. I mentioned Kleinlich. So we have four of the six classics. We are missing Glenkinchy from the Lowlands and Craggamore from Speyside.
Right.
And again, it's representing each region. So the Distiller's Edition.
You like these glasses?
Yeah, these are really nice glasses.
They're
nice.
I love these glasses.
Don't
no more fingerprints all over the bulb.
Don't be mad when you're missing two of them.
Right?
I'll send you home some. We had quite a few extra from the event.
I won't say no.
I have one from the Whiskey Social.
And now I can officially... Mine.
What's the Whiskey Social? Tell me more about it.
Oh, it's a nice festival. Actually, I love the venue.
The venue's gorgeous.
It was like I went to a castle in Scotland.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an absolutely stunning venue, and we got lucky. And I've said this to many people, and I'm sure people are tired of hearing it, but we were forced to move to July because we couldn't find an unlicensed venue in Houston that was big enough, and we called everywhere. And so we waited too long to announce our date, and all the other little events in town took our month of May. Mm-hmm. So we had to be pushed back to put some space between us and their events. And it worked fine, although it was definitely hot at 7 p.m. So overall, not too many complaints about that particular issue, but everyone at least acknowledged that it was definitely a little hot. So we're going to be moving it back.
Earlier.
If we do an event next year, it'll be moved to...
Why if?
I'm just kidding. Just to May.
Yeah, because you mentioned also hosting it after Tales of the Cocktail. Remember, in July?
Yeah, so we originally were going to do the week before, and then we realized it was Tales, so we went even later, so July 28th. So it was like things kept pushing us back. And for those who don't know what Tales is, it's this massive multi-day event in Louisiana that happens every year that people come from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a national event. And it's everybody industry.
Yeah.
Richard Seal sent his team from Barbados, and you have people coming from Scotland, and you basically, it's a week of conferences and events and cocktails and seminars and distillers. Mm-hmm. And you have to go. And that event is more important than anything I'm doing here in Houston. So we had to push it back even further. But all that being said, my favorite thing about this year is the new glasses, because the big complaint when you go through and you taste a bunch is when you're forced to hold the bulb, your fingers, your oils get all over the glass. And so 30 minutes into tasting, it looks gross. So it's nice to be able to hold a stem and it not affect what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, appearance is the first thing you have to judge the liquid by, right? Going back to Distiller's Edition, every classic malt has a Distiller's Edition every year. Mm. So that's why they have the year that was distilled and the year that was bottled, because it may change slightly every year.
Sure.
Due to weather and, the second maturation. So the second maturation happens after the classic malt has reached his matureness, like 14 in Oban, 10 in Talisker, 16 in Lagavulin. And then the extra year, it will be in a different sherry cask. In this case, we have Pedro Jimenez, PX, in the Lagavulin. So you can definitely feel the sweetness, the dry fruit at the end, and how the peat changes a lot with the sherry.
It's absolutely fantastic. The Distiller's Edition, and is there one more? No, the 12. What's the... God, it's been so long since I drink so much of the 16 that...
Nothing wrong with it.
I've got a couple of the distillers, and we have a few things from the distillery itself. But there's the a 12-year as well, right?
That's a special release. Is not part of the portfolio.
Okay.
Yeah. No. It's hard to find. It's highly allocated. It's kind of every year it's been part of the special releases, mm-hmm. but it's only once a year and just certain amount of bottles.
This is a lot. It's a lot more drier, and there's mm-hmm. more. I don't want to say wine influence, but it's got that dry red wine.
Taste the similarity between like the red wines. Almost like at the end, kind of want to have some water with it, but it's not like super dry. You know,
it's delicious.
It is delicious.
I could, you know, they tell you that when you taste through whiskeys, peat needs to be the last thing that you eat or drink, because it'll just ruin your palate.
Mm-hmm.
But a night of like what we're doing now, going through five different expressions of peat is beyond exciting. Especially when we get the realm of different terroir, which is huge in Scotland. The discussion of terroir and where the peat's grown and where the barley is malted and Oban and Talisker being on different Hebridean islands, but still in the same technical region, is mm-hmm. a interesting discussion.
Well, we'll get there. Not necessarily the same region. I mean, the island of Skye being the only distillery for Talisker.
Right, but is that not a Hebridean island?
Yes.
And aren't the Hebridean... I know
that part of the islands. You're talking about the islands. Well,
sure.
But in the case of Oban, it's more considered highlands. Like West Highlands, I mean, on the coast, like near the islands,
sure.
but still kind of.
But isn't Oban an island?
No, no.
It's a peninsula?
No, it's in the Highlands, West Highlands. It's not an island.
She's about to prove you wrong.
We may have to cut this part because she's about to get proven wrong.
I just want to bring a map.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Like the actual.
I'm almost positive it's right next door to. I might be thinking of Jura.
I think you're thinking of Jura.
I might be thinking of Jura.
Yeah, for
please
sure. I mean, it's. Yeah, I'll bring
here.
The big one.
I'm Googling it. That's a great thing about having a podcast.
And when you're wrong, I want this to stay on the
right
podcast.
Here.
Yeah, we're cutting it out.
It's right here, Oban.
All right, you win this round.
You tested the expert, man.
I was thinking of Jura.
This is what she does.
I was thinking of Jura. All right, you win this one.
I've been there. Oban is the name of the town. Actually, the whole town grew around the distillery. The distillery is one of the oldest from 1700s.
Oh, you're one of the oldest.
Ooh.
Sorry, I'm bitter.
Nice.
I'm just kidding.
I'm just going to say everything is right. Whatever you said goes. I mean,
You're right. I was thinking of Jura,
okay.
Which is right next door. I was totally wrong. I apologize.
You got it.
Boom.
All right.
Now I'm sweating. I'm like, no, it's not an island.
It's still delicious, though.
Been there, done that.
You've been to all of them? Do they still send you to Scotland? I know that they've a lot of distilleries, especially if I were to ever go work for a brand, it would probably be a Scottish brand because the bourbon, they'll send you to Kentucky, but I go there 3 or 4 times a year anyways.
Yeah.
I don't go to Scotland 3 or 4 times a year. do you know Docs? Greg Duxakis?
Oh, yeah, sure.
He working for Pierre Ferrand, he goes to France at least once a year.
Nice.
Kills me, man.
Yeah.
Kills me, man.
I think it's weird. I do what I do with the Libations Guild. I haven't been anywhere.
Yeah, you need to partner up with a brand.
I do. Or at least just have somebody say, can you come, please? I'll pay for your ticket.
Let's talk legalities and TABC and all those things.
It's
and
no
that's,
problem.
Yeah,
that's
it's technically illegal.
I'll go through all the red tape.
There's just, I'm jealous of the brands like, do you know Daniel's story too with Glenfiddich and that team here in Houston?
No.
They go, it's like a requirement that they all have to take a pilgrimage to visit the distillery in Scotland at least once a year. And because they want them to be knowledgeable about what you're tasting. And it's the only thing that has really attracted me to that job would be that awesome trip, that going back, and it's just awesome.
Well, it's part of the training, you know, visiting the distilleries. When I was in the Masters of Whiskey program, before the Diageo Reserve program, it was part of the training, going to Canada and do Crown, going to Kentucky, going to Tennessee, going to Scotland, and do actually an internship, like roll the barrels, do, everything. part of working in the distillery. That way you can grasp every little step of it and come and talk in shows like yours.
Yeah, or better ones for sure, to say the least.
You know, sometimes you're training bartenders. They are fairly new to the industry, so they need the basic. But sometimes you need to be more technical. It depends on your audience. Yeah.
And I know that a big part of what I think those who might listen to my show enjoy is the little tidbits of knowledge behind the curtain of just the way things have usually worked. And historically, when a new release comes to Houston or most markets, the brands focus on industry sessions where they teach the industry about their product before it gets here. Not a consumer release, so to speak, but more like going into Houston and saying, all right, let's get Reserve 101, 8-Row Flint, at Treadsack, which was a, I don't know if they're, I think they're still around, Johnny Goldberg.
Yeah, it's still there.
So basically, they would get together a bunch of on-premise accounts, get those bartenders together, and they'd bring in master distillers, they'd bring in those early releases, and let them taste it before it came to market. So that when it got here, they could actually know what they're talking about. When I first got into this whole thing, I was super jealous because I was like, no. Let me do the consumer portion. Like, so we got to launch the consumer event portion for Glenfiddich IPA Cask when it came. And the idea of breaking this to the consumer hasn't been the focus. It's been the industry. So you want them to be knowledgeable about it. And it makes sense because they're influencers. These are the people that kind of take a brand and make it what it is, because you are influencing hundreds of people a week in your bar. Whereas if you bring one consumer in, they may buy a bottle, or even if they bought a case a week, it still wouldn't equal the impact a bar or restaurant has. I remember when I found that, I was like, why are we not? Okay, that makes sense. You know, the consumer. I mean, there are people who spend a ton of money in this hobby, mm-hmm. on product as an individual, and it doesn't necessarily compare to a bar or restaurant as an individual. But if you get a group large enough, like I've argued in the past, HBS, you've got a group of almost 4,000 people, and a lot of those people are sitting on 600 bottles at their house. More than
would they ever drink it?
Oh, they're drinking
they're
every
drinking,
day.
Yeah,
they're drinking
drink,
every day.
They open them up.
There's a guy locally, Alan Richards, who I know is sitting on 600 bottles, and he drinks. Not an alcoholic, but he goes on these trips to Kentucky with us. It's hard to be responsible and keep up when you're collecting faster than you can consume. Mm-hmm. And you know the Liquor Hound. Do you know him up in Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a YouTube channel. He's got 2,000 bottles at his house. And he's the ideal image of a responsible drinker. He's not someone who's doing chugs and shots or whatever. But when you find a passion in this hobby, it's hard to consume responsibly fast enough to keep up with you spending on all these awesome items. So then you get into different spirits and... but yeah, I mean, you're familiar with that. I mean, Diageo's got their hands in a little bit of everything. You guys do everything. You guys do so much in every realm of whiskey.
Not everything, just a few good ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of y'all are so modest.
I don't know that anyone would agree with you on that. But I'm definitely trying to, you know, I think that it's an indicator of the times is all these people finding a passion in every corner of the hobby, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we can't compare to a bar or restaurant, but as a whole, I think we're definitely outpacing. And I know that because historically, private barrel programs started with bars and restaurants,
mm-hmm.
and individuals became a thing, in the last 20 years. And even still, a lot of brands, Scotch brands, focus on giving those Scotch barrels to on-premise accounts.
Mm.
And those on-premise accounts aren't moving them faster than a group like HBS. Mm-hmm. We had Morgan Weber in and his group, and at the end of last year, they had the better half of their 4 or 5 barrels that they just released to the group, and it was gone in a day.
Mm.
So it's proof to me that as a whole, you can definitely argue that groups as consumers are worth your attention compared to not to say let's ignore the on-premise accounts, but just to say
you have your place.
You have your place.
I do agree with you. That's one of the things that I've always voiced, that I like consumer events. I used to do tastings at liquor stores, hand selling, and I do believe that consumer is, well, it's our target at the end of the day. You know, without consumers, then who are we going to sell the products to? So I like to focus in the consumer. Like, even when I'm at one of my accounts, I definitely have to care what the consumer wants and, you know, what they're looking for. And if I have the opportunity to taste one-on-one or do any type of mentorship, part of my events that I host and I love is like consumer dinners, like, you know, stuff like people want to learn, then they will pay to be there. They will, you know, take the time to be there, and I'll be happy to just do the exact same thing as I do with the trade. So I agree with you. I understand. Consumer is important, and it should be. It should always be.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Open means
little bay.
And yeah, open, so, is, which is where, fun fact, which is where Beyonce got bay from, was, I'm totally kidding, bad joke.
I was like, oh, really, huh? Wouldn't be from Beyonce. Okay.
Yeah, no, so open, yeah, so I lost my train of thought. Walk through it.
Some help with that?
Yeah. That's her. That's become a dump glass.
Yeah.
We've got a clean one here.
Well, let me do my dump glass.
I have a dump glass.
You're hilarious. You're two drops.
I know.
I feel like such a lush, man.
No, don't feel like a lush, man.
I don't in real life. I'm not, but.
We did a wine episode 2 weeks back, and I was the only one that drank the wine. Like, they drank the wine, one sip, and
but you're the one that
the master sommelier was. and I consumed the glass, and
that's,
I was
me.
Like, I don't understand.
I don't believe in spit buckets or anything like that.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of them. There's no way you can go to an event like the Whiskey Social and not utilize the spit buckets.
Oh, really?
Responsibly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I was very responsible.
Drink responsibly. That is the main line. I have an
annoying tolerance. So I watch myself. I pace myself. But
did you eat?
Yeah. Well, not really. No. I had one slider,
and you were fine.
Yeah, it was perfectly fine.
It's a big concern anytime you have a variety of spirits.
Of course.
Because here's the thing: we want something. I want something fun and awesome in Houston. I want Houston to be on the map. Like, Chicago has this amazing festival. There's even one in Florida called the Whiskey Obsession. That's like a 3-day event. It's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And New York has two of them. New York has their own whiskey festival. Then they have the Whiskey Jubilee. All the big major cities like Chicago, they all have these massive events. Houston had kind of like some events, but none of them were really, in my opinion, they weren't as impactful. Like, I want this massive scene here. I want this fervor because it's here. There's people here that love this.
Houston only sets up music festivals to have that kind of appearance where they can have a 3-day situation. And if someone were to set up a festival to be that, Houston would do it. It's just that everyone is doing 1-day whiskey festivals, 1-day.
My goal is to do multiple days.
But I mean, you just have to set it up. People will come.
The biggest problem you have is you can't have a multi-day event unless there's like a hotel attached to a convention center.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got a note from this that I've never got before. Black tea. And it may be the mix between the Lagavulin I had before, but I just tasted the Oban.
I gave you a clean glass.
Oh, you're talking about this. Yes. I thought you were talking about the
hotel.
I was so confused.
No.
Tell
me about this black tea.
he's talking about
that. Yeah. No, in mid-thought of the hotel.
You're good, because I didn't catch it. I smelled it.
In mid-thought of the hotel, I swallowed the Oban, and I got some black tea on the end, and I'd never gotten that note before from this non-island whiskey. No, so you can't have these events unless they're attached to a convention center, and the way TBC works is these hotels all have their permits, and the big thing of making these events special and unique and cheap on both the vendor and the guests is it being a non-licensed venue. But you've got to follow a very strict line on how to do that and it still be compliant. Mm. So the only thing missing from the venue this year is I wish they had a hotel next door. And they don't. The closest hotel is like 2 miles.
I don't think you'd want to use any of those hotels anyway. No. A lot of them were by the hour type.
Yeah, those were Tweeties. Motels.
Those are hotels. Thanks.
Well, it'll take a couple of hours, like just a long nap and then ready to get ready to drive.
And have like
Uber. I mean, Uber. Uber. Did you advertise Uber?
Yes. We had a partnership with Uber. We did Uber. We reached out to Lyft, but they didn't reach back. I think this is mostly an Uber city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lyft isn't that big here.
And we had no problems. There were a couple of hiccups with logistics, but other than that, everyone was responsible. And
so with what you're saying, is that only related to liquor events, or is that across the board?
If you're going to do a multi-day festival that has to do with anything, really, you would probably need it next to a convention center. And it works for George R. Brown. There are multiple day events here. But when it comes – I'm referring specifically to whiskey.
That's what I'm saying. So when it comes to liquor events, they require you to do it in the convention? Or?
No. What I'm saying is you need – anytime these people – like Myra brought – what was his name that you brought with you?
Doug Kregel. Doug,
and he's their national guy.
For North American whiskey.
So he's staying in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you do these multi-day events where people fly in, like at Tales of the Cocktail, a hotel is a big aspect of that. It needs to be close by.
No, I didn't know if you were saying the requirement is it to be in
No, it's more like if you want to do a ride, you got to have a hotel nearby.
Definitely.
And most hotels that have ballrooms are licensed, and then you have a whole other set of issues.
I guess that's what you were saying about New York. They usually host events within the hotels, like, mm-hmm. and no, so well, you're in the ballroom. Yes.
Yeah.
Most conventions work best. Most conventions are that way. Even in Vegas, they're all in the massive hotels.
Or San Francisco,
This is so good. I definitely.
I'd love to hear that. He's enjoying O114 so much.
The little bay that you guys came out with. Uh-huh. A lot of times when a brand comes out with a new expression
variant. Uh-huh.
It can be hit or miss depending, but Little Bay I thought was almost better than that. Like it was good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was very pleased when Little Bay came out.
That was the newest expression, and it was small cask, so you could see was even a little darker. It was a non-age statement.
Quarter casks.
It's like white oak, brand new oak, and you know, I mean. Could be younger because it was non-age statement.
Sure.
But if you look at the color and the flavor was like spicy, woody. And that's what I got from a lot of the feedback that I got. It was almost better than 0114. Almost like it was.
Like Oban's great. Uh-huh. No complaints. But the Little Bay was just wow. Like it was a very.
Balanced.
It was very well received.
Well, yeah. One of the reasons that I brought this map, and as you're saying, for people that are not looking at us, is a flavors map that they use in Scotland for every single malt. There is 4 major flavors. That top one says smoky, bottom one delicate, left is light, and to the right is rich. Oban always sits at the middle. Mm-hmm. So meaning... It's a very well-balanced single malt. And I love to say this. I had some lady at the Whiskey Social. Came to me asking about Oban. Why Oban is from the Highlands.
Why it's so different from everything
else. And
it's
so different. Mm-hmm. And I have not been able to appreciate it as the Highland Scotch. Mm-hmm.
Sure. I would agree with you. Mm-hmm. I thought it was an island this whole time. And I consider myself pretty knowledgeable on whiskey. I'm a little... embarrassed that I didn't know that it wasn't.
I can see the rosacea.
Yeah.
Still red about that.
Well, it's coastal West Highlands. It's near to the islands.
But it's also not like anything else in its region. There's nothing. I mean, can you think of another whiskey that's anything like Oban? Highlands. When I think Highlands, I think of your Glenfiddichs, your rich apples, your baked apples. You know, like
well, you
not
can
your
find
green apples.
In this one.
Sure, you can definitely
black tea.
Find. Yes,
I definitely taste black.
You get that black tea? Do you know what I'm talking about?
If you can smell it. You can smell it. It's almost like it's lightly sweetened. Not completely unsweetened.
It is. It has a fruitiness of the Highlands, definitely. But the complexity also of the islands. It has like under 5 ppm, like maybe from 2 to 3, maybe 1. So it's very little, but it's there. Peat is there.
There is a phenolic aspect to it for sure.
Correct.
Definite marriage of flavors here. I like this.
We have about 5 minutes left. I want to get to the Talisker. Talisker is a huge favorite for a lot of peat drinkers. It is very well loved, very well received, and a solid 10-year-old malt all the way around for a surprising $60.
Talisker.
Excellent commercial here.
I'm working on it, you know. I've got a little bit of a... Oh, wow. One of my favorite parts of peat is the empty glass. Just the... that empty... Smell that. It's intense.
Yeah, that's nice.
That is intense.
I'm hungry.
Are you just starting to realize it?
Yeah. It hit me hard when you smelled that.
Oh. It smells like
that's when,
like
that's
barbecue
when you need
pork.
The barbecue. That
exactly.
Is
smells like barbecue pork.
Pulled pork.
Yes.
It smells like a pulled pork sandwich.
What's the Damaris barbecue? That's what it smells like.
The sauce. Here's the sauce.
Yeah.
Talisker 10. Medium peat.
This is on camera. My eye's itching. No one look at this part. All right. Fast forward. Talisker 10 is on top of being just an aesthetically gorgeous bottle. Like it's a very, I don't know how to say this. It's a very, I'm just going to blurt it out confidently so people don't know that I don't know what I'm talking about. It's a very masculine, it kind of demands respect.
The bottle?
Yeah. When you look at certain bottles, like when you look at Lagavulin 16 and you think of that classic Ron Swanson, manly man, woodworker bottle that just looks like a, you know, it's not like, it's not shaped like a silly, what's Virginia Black? Perfume bottle. It's just a simple, elegant bottle that at a, you know, like I said before, pretty
I'm
going
to say something
priced.
To the contrary. The label is very masculine with the lettering and stuff like that. The bottle is very sexy to me. It's very curvy. I can't look at that and say, oh, that's
a
man's
bottle. You could be both. You could be masculine and sexy.
Yeah.
No, this has femininity with the masculinity. I think this is I love it. It's a beautiful
to me, it's an iconic shape.
Yeah,
you know,
I can say that.
And this is such a silly discussion right now.
That's the evolution of Scotch. You talked about how sexy
we're four drinks in, and we're talking about how attractive this bottle is.
Oh, this bottle is not going on a date.
She's like,
you're
going to have to cut like 40 minutes out of this episode.
Oh, Lord. Filling it with all commercials. Talisker 10. What do you think?
Now,
speaking specifically on Talisker.
The only distillery in the Island of Skye. Beautiful,
gorgeous,
gorgeous distillery as well.
Oh, no, that is the right one.
Made by the sea.
And the unfortunate thing is I'm drinking it last, so it's in comparison to everything else. And I want to talk about it specifically, but it's kind of hard. Of all five, this is, and not to take away from it, it's my least favorite. It's delicious. It's my least favorite of all five.
It's the lightest.
It's like, I was about to say, very subtle notes, very subtle flavors.
Well, when you talk about, and I'm going to say this
in
for the 30th time, terroir, the regions of Scotland, the reason why those, as she pointed on the map that no one can see who's listening, different regions are known for different things. Whereas lowlands tend to be... honestly, mostly lowlands aren't really known for.
Just for your eyes.
I like that.
The word delicate's used, but lowlands are in my opinion, are not lowlands. Boring, but they're more your standard Scotch with not a whole lot of adventure. That's what lowlands are generally known for.
It's a very light spirit.
Very light, nothing crazy going on. Whereas in Islay, you've got these peat bombs that punch you in the throat and smell like iodine and medicine. And in Speyside and in the Highlands, you've got these robust Christmas flavors, right? These dried fruits.
I'm sorry, real quickly.
Yeah.
She reminds me of Vanna White right now.
I love it. I'm loving everything you're saying.
It's like, you're doing a great job. That's the thing.
Smokey and light, here's Talisker. Like, you know, I love the flavor map.
Yeah. It brings to light what you're saying. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah.
Yeah, so on the islands, where Isla's known for the way that their peat is really robust, Talisker on the Isle of Skye is a completely different smoky experience. It's not nearly as intense, and I like it for that. I like it. So for those who have never had peat and are looking to get into peat, Talisker, Oban, and it is Oban. Like, there's no A there. You just go O-B-N.
Like open the door with a V, Oban.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oban.
I like that.
Those are great introductions to peat. Whereas the Lagavulin is more like the master class.
For masters, yes.
Yeah. It's more intense. It's more robust. And so now, if you're like us who jumped right in on the deep end and enjoyed it, who doesn't mind a little, you know, jumping in the deep end? Who doesn't mind a little drowning a little bit? But the Oban and the Talisker are definitely a light introduction into it. So if you need to acclimate, kind of like when you start drinking wine, most people start off with like a white wine, then they go to the rosé, and then they move on to the reds, the really dry, robust, intense reds. So
back to the beginning, it's an acquired taste.
If someone is bold enough to be as dumb as I was, and it's going to be between these five, I would definitely say go with that 16. I think that's a great introduction for someone who's really wanting to. Like, I have a couple of friends that are kind of new to whiskey, period, but they want to understand Scotch, and I think that's a great introduction. And say, okay, now go around there on both
branch
ends.
Out from there.
Yeah, that's because it has a good. I almost drank that like, okay, this tastes like this is the standard. And then you can go below, you can go above, but this is like...
That's where you love.
That's your standard, man.
I know, right? I'm crazy.
That's good.
I'm crazy.
That's good. Well, I cannot thank you both enough for being here. Lincoln, it's good to see you again,
always
man.
Good.
Just
always
have a conversation. Yes, we're going to talk a little more.
Yeah.
Myra, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Chris,
I'd love, this is our first Pete episode, so I'm excited to see what kind of impact this is going to have, if any. And with that, we've got to go. We're out of time. But guys, thank you so much. And
cheers.
We now have full glasses, so let's go ahead and light it up. Slanjava.